This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
It's Creature Feature, a spotlight on one of the Wildlife Hospital Dunedin's extra special guests.
And we're joined in the studio by Jordana White from Dunedin Wildlife Hospital. Morena, lovely to have you with us, Jordana.
Morena, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Right, so I don't have a heads up today about who we're going to be talking about, a special guest at Dunedin Wildlife Hospital. What are you going to tell us about?
Well, we're all going to learn together about the Kawa Tiki Tiki or the Spotted Shag.
Kawa Tiki Tiki?
Yep, correct. Yep, the Spotted Shag. So we have talked about shags before on the Creature Feature, but I believe we featured the Otago Shag, which is quite a different, same family, but yep. Quite a different. The Spotted Shag's a bit more common. Whereas the Otago Shag is endemic to Otago, as the name suggests. Same with the Otago Shag we talked about. This species is also known as a cormorant. These are cormorants, shags. I did fact check this because I was a bit worried. I remember I came on and announced, hey, cormorants, shags, same thing. And I went, oh, God, did I get that right last time? And I double checked that. And I went, as you do, down a controversial rabbit hole. But so there are some resources on the internet, which is sometimes wrong, believe it or not, that do still distinguish between cormorants and shags as different types of birds. But turns out, with the advent of DNA and that kind of testing, it was determined that cormorants and shags are the same species.
Okay,
same,
well same done. Good on you. Yep. Hey, so did you know that the spotted shag and the closely related Pitt Island shag are the only yellow-footed shag species endemic to New Zealand?
Thanks for stealing my thunder. I had the yellow-footed thing on here, but that's all right. Great.
While we've been talking, I've been bringing up this wonderful website we keep talking about, which is NZ Birds Online. So if you want to follow now, just bring it up.
I highly recommend that because I realize this is an audio format and I'm going to go to great lengths to describe this bird, but it would be really, really great for people to be looking at it with us, especially you, Jeff. But before we get there, we'll just generally speaking, this is a marine bird or a seabird. It's not a pelagic seabird, so it's not way, way out at sea. The spotted shags are generally feeding within around 15 kilometers of our coastlines, and they are really common or found heavily here on the east coast of the South Island. They come into estuaries and inlets and harbors, such as Otago Harbor, to do some feeding as well. So it's not uncommon. I most often see them around the harbor area myself. So quite common. I saw a few yesterday, in fact. Now, let's talk about what this bird looks like. I have to say, I was trying to figure out a way to describe it. I was looking at photos, and I think I might be attracted to this bird. It's a little bit awkward. It's so cool looking. I just really got into looking at this bird. It's such a looker. I would describe its look as elegant punk.
Yeah. So there's definitely the Mohican tufts at the top.
Yes.
The skull and the back of the head.
Yes.
Which just look really cool.
Yeah. It's a double crested mohawk, one in the front and one in the back, which doesn't sound as, it looks way better than we're describing it. But I kind of went, if Coco Chanel met David Bowie in his Ziggy Stardust phase, but with a goth twist.
Right. Because there's a new wave color across the eyes.
Yeah. It's incredible. Yeah. So they have this incredible like emerald green sort of triangular skin patch around their eyes. And it's so striking in contrast to their black and gray feathers. And then they've got that white stripe along that runs from the back of their eyes all the way down their long, slender neck over to the shoulders. I don't know if birds have shoulders, but you know what I mean. It gives you the idea. And that's the breeding adult plumage. So that's how you know that's an adult bird. Now, they're considered to be a medium-sized marine bird. So tall and slender, sort of like David Bowie, 74 centimeters in length and usually between 700 and 1200 grams. So medium-sized bird. Now, most of the patients that we get, the spotted shag patients we get, don't look like this. We typically get the juveniles. So we don't get the Ziggy Stardust, Coco Chanel mashup. We get more of a gray, blue-gray, a slightly drabber, more drab version of this. And also the juveniles, the name spotted shag comes from these like beautiful sort of polka dots that are in the adult breeding plumage. They're quite striking, but the juveniles don't have those either because they're not quite yet that age. So they look a little different. And most of our spotted shag patients are juveniles. And the one that we're talking about today is no different. And we had a young one that came to us a couple of weeks ago. Not that surprising this time of year to get the fledglings or the young ones that have, not quite figured things out yet and maybe having a little bit of trouble in getting into some strife. So we see them for a number of reasons. I had just had a look back at our patient history to see sort of what presentations were coming in. And it is typically starvation or emaciation, you know, having trouble finding enough food or learning how to, you know, fend for themselves. We do often get them caught in fishing equipment as well. So either entanglement or they've perhaps swallowed a hook or a sinker. And that's part of that is just them moving in places like Otago Harbor and close to the coastline where there's a lot of recreational fishing happening. So this one was another case of starvation or emaciation when it came to us. And now I will say it's not a happy ending, this one, as sometimes they are, unfortunately. Generally speaking, we have a lot of trouble with shags in hospital, certain species. So the spotted shags don't do as well. The little shags certainly don't do as well. Otago shags we have much more success with. They're just perhaps a bit more robust. They handle that hospital environment a little bit better. But some of that is because by the time people are finding these birds and realize they need help, they're often pretty far down the track of not doing well. So this is no different. What we try to do is basically turn them around as quickly as possible. If we can get them out, we'll get them out. You know, if they have minor injuries or, you know, their weight isn't so awful or we can feed them up for a day or two, then we'll try to turn them around as quickly as possible. It's one of those things, there's a point of diminishing returns. So if they're in hospital for maybe 3 days, that's kind of our max. After that, you'd expect them to sort of decline because of the hospital environment. They just get stressed out. It's not natural, of course. Some birds tolerate it better than others, but the spotted shags don't seem to tolerate it at all.
Right.
So pretty tricky. They're generally pretty good to handle. They do have that kind of long, if you're looking at the photos, they do have kind of a long, sharp beak, which could be a menace, but generally the spotties are okay to work with. And, you know, they're young and they're a little bit sad at the time that they need our help. So they're often not, you know, fighting too hard.
So when they're found or spotted by members of the public or whoever it might be, are they pretty much at the point where they can be picked up easily?
Yeah, that's pretty strong indicator. Is sort of if you can approach a shag and it's not flying away, it probably needs some help. And I've actually gone up and I've gone out to pick up a few spotties. And generally they turn up in South Dunedin. You know, they turn up in that kind of the industrial or commercial area down in South Dunedin. They're kind of wandering in from off the harbor, or they maybe are trying to, you know, have to land because they're not doing so well. And they end up in quite a busy place. So that's another generally pretty good sign. If they're turning up in the pretty built up urban environment, then something's wrong. We've had some come in from Caversham before as well. So not too far off the harbor, but not in a place that you'd expect a marine bird to turn up. So that's, yeah, definitely. If they seem a bit, you know, a bit dopey. Now I should point out, they don't act too wobbly or weird. They're just a little bit sluggish and they don't run away. They seem like maybe they're not afraid or they don't fly away. But that's not to be confused with neurological symptoms. So they don't tend to be too wobbly or wobble their heads around, or ataxic or, you know, off balance. So that's something that we would want to hear about because we're worried, of course, about that avian influenza, and those are some of the signs there. So don't be too, yeah, don't mix those two up if you see them in the urban area. This one that we had a couple of weeks ago, it actually stood out to me when I was thinking about what to talk about, and that's because we didn't actually have any spotted shags come to us last year at all, which is unusual because the year before we had 19, and the year before that we had 23. So I'm not sure what that means in terms of how they did last year. It could mean that they either had a really good year and they didn't need us, or they had a really bad year and there just weren't that many spotted shags. So that's quite interesting. So watch this space. Not sure what 2025 is going to look like for the spotted shags, but they do breed. They're colonial breeders. They have a lot of breeding sites that are spread out throughout Otago coastlines. We do have some breeding sites in Dunedin, as I mentioned, in the harbor and a couple of other places around the city. And I did go to a friend of the show, Graham Lowe, and ask him what he kind of knew about the health of the breeding sites this year. And he had told me that at the prion fence that we've talked about previously, that typically they do have breeding spotties there and there aren't any this year. So that's interesting. I don't know what that means. It's quite difficult to find up-to-date information. Most of the studies are done on Otago shags and not spotted shags.
Right. We often talk about, you know, what can we do to help these populations, and we don't yet know whether the particular populations are under threat, but maybe with individuals. You mentioned things like, you know, getting fishing lines, caught on fishing lines and stuff. Well, there's definitely stuff we can do around that, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I will say, I'm not too sure what's happening with the population here in Dunedin. That's true. But in terms of the overall population of spotted shags, unfortunately, the last time they updated the threat level classifications in 2021, the spotted shag plummeted from not threatened to nationally vulnerable,
right,
which is a big drop. And that it's not entirely clear what's going on. It's a significant and ongoing decline for this species. Some of it is that the really actually related to the Christchurch earthquakes, and that a significant part of their breeding activity was happening in Canterbury, and a lot of those birds were lost in the earthquakes. So that's part of it, but that's certainly not the entire picture, because there's a lot of breeding happening along the South Island. And the other breeding sites have also declined that are unrelated to the earthquakes. So we don't know what's happening there. But in terms of what we can do, I mean, yeah, it's unclear to me how much predation is involved in terms of, you know, we talk about cats and, you know, stoats and that kind of thing. I don't have any information about that, unfortunately. We don't see any spotted shags for those issues. That doesn't mean it's not happening. Human disturbances, of course, you know, and we're in their backyards. That could be contributing as well. Fishing practices that cause food shortage could be a part of it. Changing ocean temperatures. We've got the swing between La Nina and El Nino. Those things could be factors as well. In terms of what we can do, I think it's not as straightforward as what we often talk about, which is trapping and, you know, keeping your cat inside and that kind of thing. It's not as clear, but definitely with the recreational fishing, make sure you take everything with you. You know, don't leave things out in the environment. These birds are, they're diving, they're in the water, they're in the spaces that we're in as well. And if you do accidentally hook a shag, please don't just cut the line. That happens. We've had multiple spotted shags come in who have been caught, and then somebody's just snipped the line because either they didn't know what to do, or they felt, I don't know, like guilty, or I'm not sure what's happened there. But if you can, please get the bird in hand, call Department of Conservation. They will get it to us. It's a tricky situation. Please don't try to remove the hooks yourselves as well. It's quite painful on the birds. Excuse me. So we need to be doing that under pain relief. So that's one of the things. Just take everything with you. And another thing I will say, just generally speaking, if you're out and about in the beach environment, or you're walking or biking along the harbor, practice take three for the sea. So if you see rubbish, take three pieces of rubbish with you. Go home, dispose of them responsibly. We know they're not yours. That's okay. Those things are going to work their way into the marine environment and could affect birds like the spotted shag.
Right. The spotted shag, kawau tiki tiki. Hey, now, while you're here, Jordana, last time we spoke, we didn't get to catch up with you about your summertime adventures. Have you got a few minutes to tell us what you're up to?
I have hours to tell you, but I won't subject you to that. Yes, absolutely. I would be delighted to tell you about that. I was privileged again to spend a couple of months down in the subantarctic islands. So I was posted to the Auckland Islands, specifically Enderby Island, for most of the summer. So 2 months down there, working with sea lions, albatross, hoiho, and lots of other wonderful and beautiful creatures.
Mm.
Yeah, magnificent.
And predominantly, what was your role? What were you there to do?
So I was leading the field team down, the sea lion team down on Enderby Island. So that's one of the big breeding sites for the New Zealand sea lion. We were doing two kind of big programs of work around the sea lions this year. The new this year was treating female pups with a dewormer, which is called ivermectin, which some of you might be familiar with. But this is the actual on-label use for ivermectin and not the weird off-label COVID use, which is not legit anyway. So the sea lions have hookworm, which is, of course, a form of worms. They did a trial back in 2017 where they treated the sea lion pups with ivermectin, and it showed that the female sea lion pups then had a better chance of surviving a bacterial infection called Klebsiella, which has a high mortality rate in New Zealand sea lions. So the idea is, if we can lower the burden on their immune system from the hookworm, they're more likely to survive other diseases that they might contract in the environment naturally. So trying to boost that population of sea lions by treating them for that issue. It is, you know, a declining species, quite a threatened species. It's the rarest sea lion in the world. So trying to give them a little bit of a helping hand. which meant a lot of pup handling work this summer, which was really exciting for me, and I quite enjoyed it. A lot of physical hard work, but just fantastic to know that we could be giving the species a bit of extra help.
Tell us about the landscape, the environment.
Oh, it's stunning. In the late summer, so this is a completely predator-free, pest-free island. So it really is, and it's been regenerating for the last 30 years when they finally got rid of all of the rabbits and the cattle off of it, because it had been used as a cattle station for some reason so far away. I don't know what they were thinking. Beautiful Rata forest. So this is the southern edge of the southern Rata range, and it was stunning, blooming. I've heard on the West Coast as well, it was quite a good year for the Rata, but it was these bright, beautiful red flowers. It's low, kind of scrubby forest, beautiful cliffs, like dramatic cliffs on the north part of the island. And the south part of the island has a beautiful sandy beach, Sandy Bay, which is where the sea lions breed. Nothing better than looking out the hut window in the morning when you're having your morning cup of tea and seeing 30 hoiho going out to sea past all of the breeding sea lions and the harem and the pups, and the noise is just wild and it's just magnificent, the whole place. Southern royal albatross flying over. Quite windy up at the top with megaherbs all the way across the tops. It's just absolutely stunning.
Oh, sounds like you want to live there, Jordana.
I try to hide from the boat when they come to pick me up, but it never works. Yeah, it's fantastic. And it's really extremely rewarding to be part of that work. And it's also wonderful to be able to see a lot of these species that we get as patients at the Wildlife Hospital out in their, you know, in their native environment where they're meant to be, thriving, healthy, looking beautiful.
Yeah. Great to catch up on that and to talk about the spotted shag this morning too on Creature Feature. Thanks for joining us, Jordana. We look forward to catching up in a few weeks' time.
Kia ora.
The Wildlife Hospital Dunedin treats sick and injured native New Zealand species right here in the heart of Aotearoa's wildlife capital. Their expert veterinary team patches up more than 500 patients every year, returning the majority of them back to the wild where they belong. You can learn more about the hospital, including ways to support this charitable trust, at wildlifehospitaldunedin.org.nz or follow their Facebook page for more fabulous creature content.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.